588-1891 or on our website, theirishpodny.com.
Wake up with us.
The Nassau Morning Madhouse.
Named Best Morning Show by the New York State Broadcasters Association.
This is WHPC HD Garden City.
Available on iHeartRadio.
The voice of Nassau Community College. 90.3 WHPC.
It's a beautiful Friday. Live, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. I'm Tom Ryan, and my lovely wife and co-host, Tati Morales Ryan, here as well, as usual, for our Friday 5 to 6 theme of how music changed. I don't know how many of these we've actually done to date. I mean, in terms of, like, actual subjects. I think that we've wanted to hit 250, and I think we're somewhere around the 70 or 75 mark at this point of all the different things that we've covered. I'll mention it now only because of the website. If you're listening to the station, you probably hear that commercial. It might even be driving you crazy. Sorry about that. But the website is there for the taking. There's no reason for you to worry about having to pay for anything or all that stuff. And if there's something that you wanted to, that you think you missed, or if you want to hear something, if you like the general idea of what we're doing, you go to the website and you can hear anything you want to on demand, every single show. And I'm talking about literally, we're in the thousands now of shows that are available on the website. And they're all covered. I've got ASCAP and BMI and CSAC, and everybody all knows that, you know, we're completely legal and it's totally cool. So I'm glad for that. But we're doing it mostly because we just want to be able to, you know, retain access for what we're doing. If I do the show, I hate to think that it's dead when it's over. So it's really just for the sake of longevity that we're doing all that. So if you go to AmericanHitNetwork.com, you can find your way through all of the Friday shows, all the How Music Changed shows, and also, of course, all of the Wednesday shows, which includes all of the top 500 of the top 40 and the alternative top 40 albums. So check it out if you wish. All right. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, as they say, we have been, our feature as of late is the Anthology of American Folk Music, a classic collection put together by Harry Smith in 1952 that in very many ways changed the world by reminding us that the music that was happening 20 to 30 years before that period of time, now I'm talking before 1952, so the 20s and the early to mid 30s, that had been neglected and for the most part forgotten, he had brought them back to life with the Anthology of American Folk Music, right in time for the start of the whole folk thing that was happening in America. There was this whole resurgence of an interest in folk. And even Harry Smith probably had a lot to do with that happening in the first place. So all of that got us back in touch with our roots. And it was a very, very important thing because, after all, roots matter. And like I've said this since I've been on the radio, you know, great songs never die. They never get old. Even if they are 100 years old, if there's an ingredient about them that has a sense of importance, then it's still a great song. All you need to do is just be patient with the fact that it might not be up to what your expectations are in terms of recording quality and that sort of thing. But Harry did a heck of a job. And today is episode 11 in this series. We're going to end at 12. So next week is the show just before the end, I guess you could say. It's part D, which I call the classics, which is an extension of the three series that Harry put out while he was alive. The fourth one came out actually in the year 2000, 10 years after his death. And it was a bit controversial, obviously, because it wasn't 100% Harry's input. It wasn't Harry's design, although they did go out of their way to try to make it beautiful. And I think they were very successful at that. And to keep the more or less the general theme intact. So this show takes us to a bit of a new section. I mean, with the appearance now today of people like Leadbelly, Bucca White, and Robert Johnson, not to mention repeat appearances by the Carter family and Uncle Dave Makin, it should become clear why we titled this last series of shows as classics. These songs represent more or less a generation apart from those that appeared on the first three anthology releases. Most of those songs were in the 20s, and most of these happened in the early to mid-30s. And in a way, it's great because it allows us to see the growth of American folk music as it happened in real time almost. So, or at least as it developed from the 20s into the 30s. So let's get it started. Right off the bat is an artist that we hadn't heard from Harry Smith on the original series. Huddy Leadbetter, a.k.a. Leadbelly. Now, he recorded over 20 songs for the Lomaxes, that's Alan and John, father and son, in various prison settings for 18 months before this recording that we're going to play. Now, keep that in mind. This is, I think it was John Lomax was the dad. He almost used Huddy Leadbetter as his driver, his house. He lived in his house. He was his caretaker. I mean, he was taking care of Lomax. Lomax more or less had control of Leadbetter. And he would take him from place to place, and he would almost, you know, they'd make money on it, but most of it went to Lomax. And he would do this in a way so that to try to make it more commercial, he would say, well, you've got to dress up in your jail clothes. Everybody knows that you've been in and out of jail a lot, so they're going to want to see you in your prison stripes. So he would do it. But it was a kind of a wonky thing to do to a grown man who was incredibly talented and had every possibility of being as gentlemanly and adult and as formal as he could have, as he would have wished to have been, not to try to make himself the fool. But that's more or less how it was being played when Lomax was more or less controlling his life. Well, at this point, he has a commercial contract, and this is his first commercial date. His only recording of this slide guitar feature is in the form of a cante fable, or a piece that features both spoken word and, you know, sung elements. It's sort of an elegant vamp on the familiar melody of, you know, poor boy, long way from home. You hear that one, that, you hear that phrase picked up by a lot of people, right up to the point of the Rolling Stones. I mean, there's probably about 40 versions of songs that use that phrase, that phraseology. But it's the way that Leadbelly does it that elevates it to a virtuoso piece with just him on his vocal and slide guitar. From January 1935, the track is called Packin' Trunk.
This man wanna marry a woman she didn't want, but she married him in a hump for the money that he had. And she thought she got every dollar he had, but she was mistaken. But she got him pretty well bent, he's standing with his head hung down. She walked by and she said, Dad, what's the matter with you? He looked out and heard what he said to her. I'm sitting down here wondering with a matchbox, oh, my clothes. Down, you're wondering with a matchbox. Oh, my God. I sit down, you want it with a matchbox. She asked and said, Papa said, what's the matter with you? I don't want to be bothered with no suitcase on my nose. I don't want to be bothered with no suitcase on my nose. I don't want to be bothered with no suitcase on my nose. He said, I'm going to see my friend and see what he was doing his wife packing up a trunk. What would you do when your baby packing up a trunk? What would you do when your baby packing up a trunk? Now what would you do when your baby packing up a trunk? He looked at him and he already told him, get you have a gallon of whiskey and get on you a big drum. You have a gallon of whiskey and get on your guitar. Get you have a gallon of whiskey and get on your piano piece for me, little Pete. Little girl jumped down and come and said, play the piano.
That's one of the greatest blues players or personalities known to man, Lead Belly, packing trunk. Now, this next song is, it's so obvious that it's hard to believe that it could be traced back to its roots. I find that amazing. Many others have performed this blues over the years. I mean, so many that it's almost funny, including rock and roll, many rock and roll artists. Though few recall that it was the signature piece of Joe Williams, a.k.a. Crawford, Mississippi's Big Joe or Pojo Williams. Although he had to change, you know, he had to use qualifiers in his name. He couldn't just be Joe Williams because in the late 40s, early 50s, Count Basie hired a singer who went by the name of Joe Williams. His real name was Joe Goreed, but he's the guy that sang Every Day I Have the Blues for Count Basie, and he got pretty famous for that. So Joe Williams had to basically become Big Joe Williams just to differentiate himself. And in this instance, the track is credited to Joe Williams' Washboard Blues singers. Didn't have to use the big part yet because it's 1935 before the other Joe Williams stole his name. Or, well, they had the same name, so it is what it is. Now, this track was recorded again, as I said, on several occasions during his lifetime, although it was never with a group whose wildness matched this one's. And I'm talking about Van Morrison and them. I'm talking about, you just name, oh my God, how many people did Baby Please Don't Go? Joe Williams, Washboard Blues Singers.
Now, baby, please don't go. Now, baby, please don't go. before.
Probably going to be singing those words to Heidi in about a year or two. So go back to New Orleans. But the band on that track is rather interesting. Joe Williams, vocal and guitar, that's obvious enough. But the other instrument is a guy named Chasey Collins playing the washboard. And Dad Tracy is the credited with playing a one-string fiddle on that track. It's a pretty raucous noise that they got to make for just one guitar and one string and a washboard. All right, now comes an artist that Harry probably wouldn't have been able to, well, of course he would have been able to put onto the original anthology of American folk music. I wonder if he was not even aware of Robert Johnson at that point in time. Because when this set came out, the fourth set, the one that came out, I said, 10 years after his death in 2000. Harry's death was in 1991. So that occurred almost at the exact, well, the same year that a CD set of Robert Johnson's music, a compilation of all the recordings that knew to exist, was released in a box set. And it became a huge seller. And it was actually breaking into platinum territory. That's how famous that Robert Johnson had gotten well after his own death, which transformed Johnson into obviously a popular music icon whose 78 RPM original discs, if you were lucky enough to find one, would sell for as high as four figures. You could probably get $2,500 if you owned a Robert Johnson 78 RPM record. Now, jazz producer John Hammond, who was discovered a lot of people, he discovered Robert Johnson's music around in the 1930s, and he thought that it was so good that it would be compatible, that he could have him featured, Robert Johnson, with people like Count Basie and a bunch of other famous current artists for what he was going to do at in New York City, his performance to participate in the historic Spirituals to Swing event at Carnegie Hall. And that took place the day before Christmas Eve in 1938. Hammond also wanted to bring Bessie Smith onto the gig, but she had died about a year before, so he had plenty of time to accept that. But he was probably doubly annoyed or saddened, perhaps, when he found out that Robert Johnson had been signed to Vocalion as a blues singer, was signed to the event, and then was murdered in a Mississippi barroom brawl. So that was that. Big Bill Broomsey took his place, appeared instead, and the occasion marked the beginning of a second career for Big Bill Broomsey. Big Bill was very famous for being a blues singer, but by the late 30s and the early 40s, the blues was going out of style. You know, jazz was hipper now, and folk music was a beginning to take hold in its own way. So Big Bill Broomsey, you know, started a second career as a folk singer, and that ascended, of course, when the blues audience dwindled. So you have to wonder, had the younger Robert Johnson, who was much younger, he would have been in his 20s, appeared at that show, the Spirituals to Swing show, he would have been primed for a whole new career with a wider audience for himself, no doubt. How many people have taken Robert Johnson's music and made it incredibly famous? I think the most obvious person is Eric Clapton, but the Rolling Stones have done it often as well. And I think you could pick a Robert Johnson song and say, I think I know three versions of that song. It's because there's so many people that have covered his stuff. The track that they added to the Anthology of American Folk Music is Last Fair Deal Going Down. As it says, it echoes the hard-bitten prison work chants that Lead Belly and others performed for the Lomaxes when they were recording discs in the 30s, trying to get away, trying to basically turn it into something maybe that it wasn't, trying to give it a more down-home feel they thought that if everybody believed that they were really going into prisons and getting these songs, that they were getting the real thing. Not to say that Lead Belly wasn't, but it was sort of like a bit of a con the way the Lomaxes were doing it. This is Robert Johnson just being himself, and he didn't have to wear no prison clothes to sound like it. It's called Last Fair Deal Gone Down.
Keep it ringing so soon, Lord.
on that Guffin Port Island Road.
I can't help but wonder what would have happened if had he lived, if Robert Johnson had lived. Imagine if he lived to be around at the same time as, say, people like Muddy Waters and Chuck Berry when they were working at Chess Records. And he was there, and now he'd be playing with bass players and drummers and coming up with material that he could share with other musicians. I think it would have been spectacular. Very, you know, of course, the only recordings that there are the solo recordings that he made when he was in a hotel room. And that's it. I think it's like 20 of them. Like, I think maybe 20, 24 or 26 songs, and maybe only two or three of them with like more than one version that they did two takes. That's it. Now, the theme here, obviously, is the prisoner, being basically the whole prison thing, the Lomax prison thing. I didn't even realize that when I started to think about setting up this series. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this really is what it's about. Bukka White is the next artist that we're going to cover. His name is actually Booker T. Washington White, born in 1906, lived to be into 1977. He's from Houston, Mississippi, and he recorded a song called Shake 'Em On Down in 1937. Not the song we're going to play, but a sentence to the Mississippi Penitentiary, known as Parchman Farm, made him available to, guess who? John Lomax, who visited the prison, did that often, and he happened to record Bukka White there in 1939. So his next commercially produced sides in 1940 included several autobiographical pieces about his incarceration. Harry Smith notes that this song that we're going to play, Parchman Farm Blues, and the other track that we just played, Last Fair Deal Gone Down, is connected to 99 Year Blues, which was a song that we played back on Volume 3. By the way, another thing that might interest you is to say that Bukka White is B.B. King's first cousin. B.B. King credits White as an early teacher and a mentor for him. Here's Bukka White, Parchman's Farm Blues.
Just give me life this morning down on Parchman Farm. Just give me life this morning down on Parchman Farm. I wouldn't hate it so bad, but I left my wife and mom. My wife, all you have done gone. Oh, goodbye, wife, all you have done gone. But I hope someday you will hear my lonesome song. Listen, you men, I don't mean no harm. Oh, listen, you men, I don't mean no harm. If you wanna do good, you better stay off old Parchman Farm. We go to work in the morning just to dawn of day. We go to work in the morning, just the dawn of day. Just in the setting of the sun, that's when the work is done. I'm down on old Parchman Farm. I sure wanna go back home. Down on no Parchman Farm, but I don't wanna go back home. But I hope someday I will own
remind you, you're listening to WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City, New York. It's the show, of course, is American Hit Radio, and we are covering the Anthology of American Folk Music, getting near the end of this series. In fact, getting even closer to the end as we spend some time. Now, we spent a good portion of the songs that we've played so far were prison songs. And it has me thinking in the back of my head that there's an aspect about that that's unfortunate. I think that the prison songs became, again, because of the way that Alan Lomax handled it, had a lot to do with like getting, almost making it a romantic notion. It romanticized this idea for white people to think, ooh, the real blues is about, you know, going into the prisons and getting these people to sing about their miserable lives. And what is bothersome about that is they really are singing about their miserable lives. This isn't some sort of like, you know, dog and pony show that's going on here. These are grown men who were suffering, usually for reasons that were totally absurd. I mean, Lead Belly ended up in prison for, I think, on three different occasions. And all three occasions, apparently, it was eventually determined that he was innocent. They were able to more or less prove that. That's been by some people who like were able to really investigate. But that didn't matter if you were black in that in America, in the South America, South of the United States at that point in time. And we hear the blues and we think of it as a romantic notion. Like, oh, these guys are great. They're playing the guitar in prison and they got all these work songs that they're doing. It's really, it should give you goosebumps. This is my point. All right. Anyway, that's my two cents. We do move on now to gospel music. Now, gospel music changed a lot in the late 30s with the influence of jazz and what was going on. And we did a gospel series, Heidi and I, not too long ago. If you want to go to our website, I think we did a pretty honking good job of getting together like a really good feel for how gospel music progressed in the United States over the course of about 15 or 16 shows that we did. And some of the bands that we covered, one of the bands that we covered most importantly was like the Golden Gate Quartet and the Dixie Hummingbirds. They were the bands that really changed from the old school sort of gospel to a new school sort of gospel, which had all sorts of different like harmonics to it and really cool rhythmic changes. Well, in this instance, this is before that. Now, this is a group called the Heavenly Gospel Singers from Spartanburg, South Carolina. At the time, there were a leading quartet in an older, robust style before the challenging jazz-related harmonies began to come into play. What's interesting is that a couple of members of the Heavenly Gospel Singers would eventually end up joining and becoming members of the Golden Gate Quartet and the Dixie Hummingbirds. So they were part of that transition. But here is what it was like just on the cusp, maybe a couple of years before that change took place. The Heavenly Gospel Singers, the song is called Mean Old World. This is from 1935.
Is it a mean? Try try to live here, or to try to stay here, or until you die.
Home, home, home.
Without a mother,
without a father,
oh, without a sister,
Lord, ain't got no brother.
No,
this is a mean old world to try to live in,
or
until you die.
Home, home, home.
You gotta pray.
To try to stay here,
Lord,
until you die.
Home, home, home.
Without a mother,
without a father,
without a sister, Lord, ain't got no brother.
Oh,
this is a mean old world to try to live in,
Lord,
until you die.
Home.
All right. That's Heavenly Gospel Singers with Mean Old World. Now, we've covered the Carter Family a few times already in this series. We've got one more track that gets added onto it. And it's an interesting place to put it. And I think that's what they're, why they're doing this here. When you think of the Carter Family, you think of them as being like responsible for like what do they call it? The Big Bang of country music. They more or less created the genre. But what gets overlooked sometimes is how much of that material was actually blues material. Like in 1930, the Carter Family's 1930 coupling of the song The Cannonball and Worried Man Blues was marked the occasion of their first blues release back in 1930. They released a song called Carter's Blues from 1929, but that wasn't really in the form of a blues progression. But it did signal at least their awareness of the blues idiom, along with Sarah's yodel, from Jimmy Rogers, whose blue yodels had become part of a broad musical landscape. Now, Jimmy Rogers was also part of that big bang of country music, but if you listen to any one of those yodels, pick a number, they're all blues. Every single one of them is a blues song. They're quite predictably arranged, like a 12-bar blues. Although Jimmy sometimes adds a bar or two because that, you know, his idiosyncrasies. So, African-American songster Leslie Riddle, who was born in 1905 from Kingsport, Tennessee, claimed to have taught the Cannonball to the Carters, along with Lonesome for You, which was better known as I Know What It Means to Be Lonesome, in their hands. Despite an active association with this guy, Leslie Riddle, they recorded no further blues until 1936 when they covered Ma Rainey's song, Jealous Hearted Blues. Only they called it Jealous Hearted Me. After that, Hello Stranger followed in 1937, and it has since become one of the Carter Family's best-known songs. So, perfect time to play that exact track. The Carter Family, Hello Stranger.
Loving hand in mine,
you are a stranger,
and you're a pal of mine. Get up, rounder, let a working man lay down.
Get up, rounder,
let a working man lay down.
You are a rounder,
but you're all out and down. And four four streetcars.
Boy, every time
I ride six and four streetcars,
I can see my baby
peeping through the bar. She bowed her head, she waved both hands at me.
She bowed her head,
she waved both hands at me.
I'm prison bound,
I'm longing to be free. Troubles are like mine.
Oh, I'll see you
when you haven't got a dime. Weeping like a willow, mourning like a dove.
Weeping like a willow,
mourning like a dove.
There's a girl up the country
that I really love. Your loving hand in mine.
You are a stranger,
and you're a pal of mine.
I can't get enough of the Carter family. It's so funny that I feel like I spent a great portion of my life not even really being aware of them much. When I grew up here in New York, they weren't really something that you would hear on a regular basis. And it was mostly through, I guess, Harry Smith and what he did that brought it to me. And eventually, you know, it got disseminated and fell in love with it. That's another series that we did, by the way. We did an entire series on the Carter family in our How Music Changed series. So there's that. If you want to go back again, just to mention the website, I should mention it's AmericanHitNetwork.com. If you want to just type in what it actually is. But if you just search for American Hit Radio, you'll be fine. We'll be good. So, where does this bring us? Sister Clara Hudman comes up next. Now, again, maybe if you're a regular listener, and you should be, you'd probably be aware of some of the history that I'm about to share with you, because I had mentioned earlier that we had done an entire series on gospel music. And Sister Clara Hudman was one of the voices that we would hear, perhaps without even knowing her name. So here we actually get to find out, you know, who she is. She was also known as Clara Bell Golston or Clara Golston Brock. And by the 1940s, she went by the name of the Georgia Peach. She was a member and the song leader in Reverend J.M. Gates' Atlanta congregation. Now, I mention that because when we did our gospel series, we did a lot of coverage of some of the music that came out of the J.M. Gates congregation. And earlier on the Anthology of American Folk Music, Harry Smith actually put in a couple of his speaking homilies, which had certainly Clara Hudman like singing in the background as he was giving his speeches. So, only this time, this is just credited straight out to Clara without J.M. Gates. Now, she became a star soloist in about the same generation that produced other people like Sally Martin, Mahalia Jackson, and Willie Mae Ford Smith. Stand By Me, the song we're about to play, was composed by Reverend Charles Albert Tindley, who we did cover in our deep history of gospel music. In that series, he was a Methodist minister who also wrote songs like What Are They Doing in Heaven Today? We'll Understand Better By and By, and Take Your Burden to the Lord and Leave It There. Some of the songs it got played quite often in the 1960s civil rights era. And another song, Beams of Heaven, which inspired Thomas A. Dorsey and other gospel composers in the 1930s. So it all came from, you know, basically Clara Hudman and her work with the composer, Charles Albert Tindley, and, of course, the Reverend J.M. Gates. By the way, Bessie Smith was birched at Tindley's church in Philadelphia after she passed away. Here's Sister Clara Hudman with Stand By Me.
When the storm of life are raging, stand by me. When the storm of life are raging, stand by me. Stand by me. When the host of hell has failed, and my strength began to fail, thou never lost a battle. Stand by me.
Clara Hudman taking the lead on that one. Stand By Me. All right, now this next track, I could warn you, it actually was taken from a piece of minstrel trash, to be honest. I'll say minstrel trash because it was a racist song. It was sheet music that was released in 1841 under a title that actually had the N-word in the title of the song. Free N-word was the name back in the 1840s. And they somehow managed to take this offensive thing and turn it into something which is genuinely entertaining. I could even like read you some of the original lyrics, but it's just, what's the point of just me trying to pretend I'm going to have some black accent or something? But despite this song's origins in minstrelsy, this song has survived more as a humorous indictment of like the white pioneers, rural dwellers, and other groups accused of poor manners and inferior breeding. However, different versions warn girls basically from one place to not date boys from somewhere else. But in this version, by the West Virginia, by Al Hopkins and his Buckle Busters, they actually turn it around inside out. Al Hopkins from Galax, Virginia, warns West Virginians against consorting with their own. And the melody is sort of like A Lazy Farmer Boy, which is a song that we played in Volume 1. So Check it out. Al Hopkins manages to turn some trash into something that's a little bit more fun and humorous. West Virginia Gals.
Come on, you West Virginia gals, and listen to my noise. Don't you court these West Virginia boys. If you do, your portion will be cornbread and bacon, you will see. Cornbread and bacon, you will see. When you go a-courtin', they will set you a chair. The first thing they say is, my daddy killed a deer. Next thing they say when you step down, mammy, ain't you bakin' your Johnny Cake Brown? Mammy, ain't you bakin' your Johnny Cake Brown? When they go to meetin', I'll tell you what to wear. Scissor tail coat all ready to tear. Old leather boots with the top turned down. Pair of cotton socks that they wear year round. Pair of cotton socks that they wear year round. When they go to stores, they take a turn of corn. Tad of salty butter, right fresh from the churn. Doorkeeper says you haven't got enough for a plug of tobacco and a bill of snuff. For a plug of tobacco and a bill of snuff. When they boil the lasses, I'll tell you what to do. Build a rough furnace without any flue. Grind their cane around and around. Stop the lasses boiler and they set it on the ground. Stop the lasses boiler and they set it on the ground. They build their houses with log walls. Don't have windows, none at all. Clapboard roof, an old slab door. Sandstone chimney and a punching floor. Sandstone chimney and a punching floor. Take you away to the Blackjack Hill. There to live and make your will. There you stay and starve in space. That is the way of the West Virginia race. That is the way of the West Virginia race.
All right, I got time to squeeze in one more song, and it's a good one by a guy named Blind Alfred Reed. He was one of the better topical singers and composers of the 20s. He was almost like a newspaper man, coming with words about the times. Now, the song we're about to play reminds us that the depression conditions in the agrarian South hit harder and sooner than it did up around Wall Street. This song was written and recorded in 1929, so keep that in mind. Blind Alfred Reed is the artist, and the song is called How Can a Poor Man Stand Such Times and Live? Thanks, folks. We'll be back with the final episode for this series next Friday.
There was once a time when everything was cheap, but now prices almost put some man to sleep. When we pay our grocery bill, we just feel like making our will. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? I remember when dry goods were cheap as dirt. We could take 2 bits and buy a dandy shirt. Now we pay $3 or more, maybe get a shirt that another man wore. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Well, I used to trade with a man by the name of Bray. Flour was 50 cents for 24-pound bay.
happy side, just like skinning a flea for the hide. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Oh, the schools in hell today ain't worth a cent, but they see to it that every child is sin. If we don't send every day, we have a heavy fine to pay. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Prohibition's good if 'tis conducted right. There's no sense in shooting a man till he shows fight. Officers kill without a cause and come clear what funny laws. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Most of preachers preach for dough and not the soul. That's what keeps a poor man always in a hole. We can't hardly get our breath, taxed and schooled and preached to death. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Oh, it's time for every man to be awake. We pay 50 cents a pound when we ask for steak. When we get our package home, got a little wad of paper with gristle and bone. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live? Well, the doctor comes around with a face so bright, and he says in a little while you'll be all right. All he gives is a humbug pill, dose of dope and a great big bill. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times and live?
Thanks again. See you next week. Bye-bye.
What an electrifying episode of American Hit Radio.
Electrifying? It was straight up fly to the max.
I'm just so sad that it's over.
Aww. Don't be sad, because this show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by AmericanHitNetwork.com.
What the heck is AmericanHitNetwork.com?
On AmericanHitNetwork.com, you can listen to archived shows of American Hit Radio, check out playlists, interviews, album reviews, and learn how music shaped the world.
Okay, that actually does sound fly to the max.
Don't steal my catchphrase.